from KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Pushback against the White House's stated refusal to cooperate in the House's impeachment inquiry continued this morning as a group of conservative lawyers and former Republican administration officials called for an expeditious impeachment investigation and potential trial in the Senate. Meanwhile, two associates of Rudy Giuliani who are tied to the Ukraine scandal are under arrest this morning, charged with finance violations. And all this as a Fox News poll released this morning finds that a majority of registered voters want Trump impeached and removed from office. We're going to talk about the latest news and what to expect next as the impeachment inquiry progresses. Joining us first is Ann Gearin, White House reporter for The Washington Post. Welcome to the program, Ann Gearin.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, delighted to have you here. And I guess I'm going to begin with a letter that went out from White House Attorney Pat Cipollone. It sounds from the text of that like the White House and pretty much the White House's actions as well confirm that is being defiant and a kind of war on Congress, not sending documents, not essentially honoring subpoenas, and perhaps definitely leading us to a constitutional crisis.
Well, it certainly seems like a constitutional crisis. It is a pretty good possibility. But what Cipollone's letter really is a political thesis rather than a legal treatise. He's not really citing precedent or making a legal argument that holds together beginning to end in a five-page document. What he's basically saying is this is politically untenable and improper and unprecedented and lots of other adjectives he throws around. But basically, his argument is that the president is being treated unfairly. He's not being allowed to really fully confront his accusers, and that the entire thing, beginning to end, is illegitimate.
I've never seen anything in our Constitution about a president being entitled to confront his accusers. Have you?
Correct. It's not there.
It is not there. And yet that's the argument. And the argument seems to be put forward by the White House that along with the fact that there isn't a full House meeting or something along the lines of complete House of Representatives, at least tending to this, that seems to obviate.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's an effort here to distract from what is happening in the House by talking about what isn't, which is there has not been and probably won't be, at least for a little while, a full House vote on impeachment. What the House is doing now is moving toward that. But again, there's something in the Constitution that says that you have to vote first. The history of these things is that there's an inquiry which moves toward a vote. And the Constitution is not specific on exactly what you're supposed to do and when. But the White House argument is that we should know going in, the White House, we should know what we're up against and what we're defending against. So have the vote first. And that's an argument that you hear being echoed by the president's supporters, some in Congress, but most outside of Congress, to further the larger argument, which is that he is somehow being treated unfairly.
What do you make of the fact that we have a number of polls and perhaps most in many ways, most worthy of consideration, a Fox News poll that says that the president is essentially not in the right here, that the public wants to move forward with impeachment inquiry.
Yeah, that is a really significant development, and it has been the Fox News poll is the, I believe, fourth or fifth, depending on how you count them, this week to come to very similar conclusions. If you're the White House, the thing to fear here is how quickly this appears to be moving. The shift among people who say broadly, registered voters broadly, who say that the House should undertake an impeachment inquiry and see where it leads, has shifted really dramatically in polls from The Washington Post, from NBC, from Wall Street Journal, from other outlets, and now from Fox. That number has moved very fast. What has moved a little bit more slowly is people who say broadly that they support the removal of the president from office. And then there's also a subset of that, which is the Republicans who say that they support both an inquiry. That is rising. There was a 20% shift in that, 20 point rather a shift in that in the Washington Post poll, came out Tuesday. And then Republicans who say that they could or would support the president's removal if the impeachment inquiry found that he had committed an impeachable offense. Those are worrying numbers. They're not at a point where the White House would, you know, have their hair on fire at this point. But the speed at which some of those numbers have moved and the fact that they're moving at all should be deeply worrisome for the president and his legal team.
Ann Guerin with us, White House reporter for The Washington Post. Do you think that the public is also going to be, to some extent, even more supportive in the wake of these two arrests of President Business Associates and actually clients of Rudy Giuliani?
It's possible. I mean, these are minor characters who very few people had heard of before this morning, and most of the president's supporters would not have heard of or have any reason to know a great deal about even after today. But the fact that this has now directly implicated people that Giuliani was dealing with is certainly it gives a kind of narrative credence, is maybe one way to think about it, to the whistleblower complaint and to the House impeachment effort that resulted from it. I mean, the basic thing that the House is looking at here is, you know, was this a rotten deal from the beginning? And was the administration's intention in its dealings with Ukraine really more about business proposition and the enrichment of the president or people around him or his political goals than it was about U.S. policy? And although this is sort of a tangential part of that whole story, the idea that these guys were you know, running some potentially weird sham gas company and making money off of it, and they're all mobbed up with Rudy Giuliani, is going to give the president's critics and, frankly, the House impeachment inquiry another thread to pull.
Now let's explore this a little with you, if we might, Anne, because the fact of the matter is that Zelensky, head of state in Ukraine, is saying, I wasn't pressured at all. And you've got now Mike Pence saying, take my transcripts. I was on the call. And the fact is that the president was fighting corruption. I mean, we're getting support for that narrative.
Yes. And corruption certainly does come up in the transcripts of the call, the accounts of the call we've seen. But the way it comes up is that the president is telling Zelensky, I think, or there's reason to think, that some corrupt business occurred involving the Bidens, and I want you to go look at it. And then there's a pause, and he says, I want you to do me a favor. So the president's critics say that that's a clear quid pro quo. The president is telling Zelensky, I want you to go look into this thing that I'm telling you is a problem, whether it is or not. And until you do, you're not going to get a meeting with me or the money you're asking for. The president's version of it, Mike Pence's version of it, is no. The president is identifying a real and persistent problem in Ukraine, which is official government corruption and paying, handing out cash to people who don't deserve to get it. In this case, according to the president's narrative, the former vice president, Joe Biden's son Hunter, who served on with a rather lucrative position on a state-sponsored gas company. The gas comes up a lot in this whole argument. And, you know, that it's true. They are talking about corruption. What's not happening on that call is any wider discussion of U.S. policy goals for Ukraine or what the United States would like to see happen with Zelensky in terms of kind of hitting the reset button to get a new relationship with Ukraine after a period of some kind of problematic dealings with the previous government, or any discussion of the other thing that Zelensky brings up a couple of times, which is the fact that he's in a war with Russia, and he would really like some U.S. Rhetorical and military backing for that.
Again, Ann Guerin, White House reporter for The Washington Post. We're going to bring Ro Khanna into this discussion, U.S. Congressman and representing California's 17th Congressional District in the South Bay. He's also a member of the House Oversight Committee, the House Budget Committee, and the House Armed Services Committee. Welcome, Congressman Khanna.
Thank you for having me on.
Glad to have you on. Let me just begin by asking you about the impeachment inquiry. There are about six committees in the House that are investigating the president in a number of areas, in addition to the phone call with Zelensky. And I'm wondering, and many people are wondering, if ultimately articles are brought, and I don't mean to be suggesting you can read tea leaves here, but if articles are brought, are they going to be narrowly focused on that phone call and quid pro quo, or look at emoluments, look at the 10 things that were brought up by the Mueller investigation about obstruction of justice? In other words, how focused or how broad?
My sense, having talked to members on the Judiciary Committee that are going to be responsible for drafting up the articles, is that they will be broad and cover the extent of the president's misconduct. But when we're making the public case, the simplest place to focus is the president calling Zelensky and asking for dirt on a political rival. That is so clear cut. The president has basically admitted to doing that on national television. So that will be the public case. But I believe that the articles themselves will be fairly broad.
What about the lockdown that occurred after this? I mean, some look at that as a good article of impeachment as well, or something certainly to investigate. That, and by the way, we should mention here that under lockdown, after the president had a conversation with the chief of state of Australia and the chief of state of Mexico, suddenly everything kind of went under lockdown.
That's very concerning as well. It's a breach of protocol. Why are these transcripts that nationally sensitive and don't have classified information, why are they being secured in a place that's only there for classified information? But I think that this is getting a little bit into the weeds. I think what most Americans see is that you shouldn't be calling on a foreign government to dig up dirt on your political rival. Whether you're running for city council or whether you're running for president of the United States, you don't use the apparatus of government to go disparage or dig up dirt on a rival. And that's so clear cut, and that should really be the focus.
Congressman Khanna, Ro Khanna is with us, U.S. Congressman for California's 17th Congressional District. Let me give out the phone number because I know there are many of you who have questions, and the congressman is going to stay with us. I have one more question for Ann Guerin, who unfortunately has to leave. But before I do that, let me give out the number that you can join us at. Our number is available, and it's not only possible to reach us by phone, but of course you can reach us in other ways as well. You can get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook or at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have or comments to forum@kqed.org. But the toll-free number for your calls, and you can join us now at that number, is 866-733-6786. I'd like to have you weigh in or any questions you might have to be brought forward. That number again, 866-733-6786. Before I go back, we'll go to your calls and emails. Let me go back to Ann Guerin for a moment. And while we have you here, I want to get your response to Mike Pompeo, who said, you know, we'll do anything we can required to us to do by law and the Constitution.
Well, I think, you know, Mike Pompeo is in a very difficult and really, these are uncharted waters. He's in a difficult position here. It's his department that should have the frontline relationship with Ukraine. And he essentially was being, you know, shadowed or in some versions outmaneuvered by the president's personal lawyer, who had his own separate line to the new Ukrainian government. And the fact that Pompeo was on the call, sometimes the Secretary of State is on president's calls with foreign leaders and sometimes not. It's not necessarily unusual, but it does suggest to me, with all of the other circumstances we know about, that Mike Pompeo understood that this was a huge presidential priority and that there were a whole lot of moving pieces that he wasn't in direct control of. And he needed to be on that call, and he needed to be following up and trying to figure out not only what Rudy Giuliani was up to, but what the president was up to with this new and new leader and a potentially consequential change in U.S. policy going forward with a very important ally who Mike Pompeo knows probably better than the president, it is the head of a country that has a large political constituency. And we are now seeing some of Mike Pompeo's fears come true because, you know, Republicans who are, remember what Ukraine meant and who have a suspicion of Russian intentions that the president doesn't always share are starting to voice their concern about this as well.
Ann Guerin, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Ann Guerin is White House reporter of the Washington Post. Congressman Kahn, if I can go back to you, what recourse will the Congress avail themselves of? By that, I mean, you know, there are just so many things you can do if people simply stonewall, and that seems to be pretty much on the horizon here. And I would have to ask or amend to that, what about what people seem to be dismissing as, no, we can't do that, or that's unlikely, hasn't been done in a century, sending people to jail or fining them huge amounts of money?
Well, the fining is certainly on the table, and this administration has continued to stonewall, and this, they've been doing this for 3 years. But that, of course, in itself can become an article of impeachment. One of the charges against Richard Nixon was that he obstructed Congress. Trey Gowdy, who is now the president's lawyer, when he was in Congress, said it is inexcusable for the executive branch not to hand over documents or cooperate with congressional oversight. So the administration's delay tactics are not going to work. The Judiciary Committee is going to draft up articles. I expect that the entire House will vote on those articles before the end of the year. And I think they're just hurting their position by signaling to the American public that they have something to hide and aren't willing to be forthcoming and transparent.
Another just quick question for you, Congressman Kahn, and that is, and I know you've been with the Sanders campaign, but Vice President Biden in New Hampshire recently said that the president violated his oath of office. He should indeed be impeached. Does this, as you see it, gain or at least move your forces toward impeachment to an even greater extent?
I'm glad Vice President Biden spoke out forcefully. His character has been maligned and assassinated. No one on the Democratic side wants to see that happen to a vice president who served honorably for 8 years under President Obama. The president, Trump, has been vicious. He's doing to Joe Biden what he did to Hillary Clinton. He's going to do that to whoever the Democratic nominee is. So I think the party is unified in saying something very simple. You can't abuse your office by digging up dirt on political opponents through foreign leaders. And certainly there seems to be unity in the House Democratic caucus now on that issue, whether you're progressive, whether you're moderate, whether you're supporting Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden. Everyone understands what the president did here was an abuse of office.
By the way, before I go to our callers, can I get you to comment on Senator Sanders' health?
Certainly. I had the chance to speak with him yesterday. He's in good spirits. He's recovering. He expects 100% recovery. He will participate in the debates. He's going to campaign vigorously. Of course, it's been a tough time for his family, not just the incident with his own health, but he lost his daughter-in-law at 46 just yesterday to cancer. So he is taking time to with family and to recover, but I expect him to be vigorously out there on the campaign trail.
U.S. Congressman Ro Khanna with us, and let me go to your calls. And let me begin with Jess. Jess, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. A question and a point. The logical conclusion of the way things are going is that the Supreme Court will decide that the materials need to be turned over and people need to testify, and that Donald Trump just says, make me, and the DOJ and FBI being under his guidance will be between a rock and a hard place where the court is saying going to get it, but their boss, President Trump, is saying, I order you not to. What happens then? And my point is that I think it behooves the House leadership to give a little bit of a Constitution education to the public in general that what we're not doing here is a typical criminal trial, and that the evidence and the proof necessary is completely different than in a criminal trial, and the public needs to know this.
You're raising a good question and I think making a good point. And Congressman Connor, let's take that second point first. The public needs a education, and Congress can really step up to the plate here, can't they?
Absolutely. The only remedy in the Constitution for an abuse of a president's power is removal from office. It is impeachment, because as the caller pointed out, the president is in charge of the executive branch. The president, under the Justice Department's reasoning, cannot be indicted while in office. So the remedy is a political removal, and the caller is right that that doesn't involve the same level of detailed investigation as a criminal matter. That said, here the president has basically admitted to the underlying facts, and you have a transcript that shows those underlying facts. So I don't think this is really about a factual dispute. It's about a question of values. Do you believe that the kind of tactics and conduct that the president has are becoming of the office of the president of the United States, or do you think they're a violation of the Constitution?
But I believe the caller raised another important point, his initial point, and that is if the Judiciary Department, under the leadership of Bill Barr, who has pretty much been at the president's beck and call, is not going to do the work that the judiciary needs to do and has to do in conjunction with this investigation, where are you left? You are behind between a rock and a hard place.
Well, we have so much of the evidence already. We have the call transcript. We have the president's own comments on national television that he's asking Ukraine and now China to investigate. We have the whistleblower complaint and the memo. So there is enough evidence to move forward for the Judiciary Committee. Now, we may not know the extent of it, and there may be far more corruption or wrongdoing than even the public knows. But I think that the House has enough, at least, to make a determination on impeachment.
Another caller joining us. That's Michael. Michael, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, a quick comment. I think at the root of a lot of this is that Donald Trump can't conceive of a rich man's son doing something shady without the rich man being involved. So I think he assumes that Biden was directing Hunter Biden to do everything he did because that's what he does with his own sons. The thing about which I originally called was that
his own son, by the way, of course, came under investigation as well, we should add, Donald Trump Jr., yeah.
Sure. And I'll also point out with regard to the Constitution that Mr. Trump has a bust of Andrew Jackson in his office, with all that implies. My main question, though, is when people are polled about impeachment, is anything done to see that they know that impeachment does not remove the president? Because I think that may affect the numbers.
I think that's an interesting point as well. And, Ro Khanna, you know, as someone long in the broadcast world who actually was broadcasting during the Clinton impeachment, there are a lot of people who just simply don't understand that impeachment doesn't mean what they think it means. It's an indictment, and then it has to go to the Senate, and the president has to go on trial with the Senate, which is now, of course, dominated by Republicans.
Michael, you're absolutely right, and the reality is that I think many people assume impeachment is removal. I have friends who have made that assumption, or certainly some of the constituents in our district who have that view. And so I think that the polling, which now shows that the majority of people support impeachment, is probably that the majority of people support removal. And it would probably be even higher if you were to ask the question, do you support the House impeaching and the Senate not convicting? My guess is the support is even higher. But the relevant point is that the polls in the last 2 weeks have moved dramatically. For almost 2.5 years, the polling had most Americans, most independents, opposed to impeachment, opposed to removal. And now you have majority supporting impeachment and majorities of independents supporting impeachment.
How do you read that? Do you read that as this inviolable base, which would not move against Trump even if he shot someone on Fifth Avenue, is finally starting to show some diminution?
Honestly, I'm not sure it's the base that's moving. I think he has retained his 40% base, according to most of the polling. But what is moving are the independents. A lot of the independents in the past said, you know, we think what Donald Trump is doing is wrong and unseemly, but we just don't think it's worth putting the country through such a divisive process. We don't want you spending your time on impeachment. Just beat him in the polls. And given the brazenness of Trump's conduct, the independents now have come to say, no, something has to be done. You have to hold him accountable. And the reality is, I mean, I know everyone talks about Donald Trump's base. Donald Trump won in part because of his base, but he also won independents in many parts of the country, and he will not be reelected if he loses independents.
Yeah, I think that's a point certainly well taken. And let me get Jim on next. Jim, join us. You're on the air.
Thank you, Michael. I wanted to ask the congressman, there is the impeachment and there's Article 24 for removing the president, but I understand him being the commander-in-chief. If there's a national, security threat because of him not removing himself and not if he has to be removed by force, can the military step in and, arrest him as a national security threat and remove him as the commander in chief?
I think it's a vital question, Jim. There are many who feel that President Trump, even if he loses the election in 2020 or if he's impeached, will not leave the office. What recourse, Congressman?
Jim, I don't have the concern that he wouldn't leave the office if the House and the Senate certified someone else as the winner. I am convinced that the military would follow who the House and Senate certify. And it's important to remember, as much as there was wrongdoing, interference in the previous election, the Senate Democrats unanimously and the entire Senate certified the results, which then is what led to his being installed as president. My bigger concern is, would he try to obfuscate the results? Would he call into question whether he won or lost Wisconsin and really sow the seeds of doubt in whether it was a legitimate election or not? And then that would lead to a constitutional crisis if it weren't being able to be resolved in the House and Senate and if there was a partisan difference in the election results. And so that is my concern. I'm not as concerned if the House and Senate certified a winner, whether the military would follow through in abiding by that.
But he would still be the commander-in-chief, would he not?
He would, but I think popular opinion, public opinion of the Republicans and Senate would make sure that the Supreme Court would make sure that the House certification stood for who the president of the United States is.
Congressman Khanna, appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's Ro Khanna, U.S. Congressman for California's 17th Congressional District, Silicon Valley, and a member of the House Oversight Committee, the House Budget Committee, and the House Armed Services Committee. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. Urge you to continue this discussion online simply by going to kqed.org/forum. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, and Bianca Taylor. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer is Ariana Prail, with support from Amanda Font. Interns are Caroline Smith and Sam Klein-Markman. Executive editor is Ethan Lindsay, and our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. And thank you for joining us for this morning's Forum program. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.